His talent is still intact, but his eyes are giving out. All the images he created with his pen are only images he can conceive in his mind. Writing and dreaming are his best escape, but when he stops and awakes, the day brings back his night. Let's go visit Mr. Milton.
Maybe you got lost somewhere, swimming too far off the beach, off the coastline.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to The Cause. My name is Rob, and today we are going to be discussing the second and third set of poems in the Harvard Classic series in Volume 4. I initially planned to break this video up into two videos, on the second set of poems and the third set of poems, but because the third set is so short, I decided to combine them into this one video. The poems we will be going over in this video are the ones written while he lived in Horton, and also the ones during the English Civil War. The poems in these two sets are very different from the previous poems we went over for Milton. There is a refinement that I can't quite put my finger on. The sensory use of language, it transports you into the scene. The poems in the second set stretch on a little longer, with Comus actually being the longest one. In the next video of this series, we will finally move into Paradise Lost. I'm actually getting pretty excited about that. It should be a good read. So with no further ado, let's discuss Milton's poetry. First, we're going to discuss the poems during his time living in Horton. He would take about a 6-year self-directed personal study and work on his education during this time at Horton. How awesome would that be? And the first two poems we come up against are like yin and yang, water and fire, darkness and light. One poem, a relaxing walk through an English countryside. The other, a walk of hurry, stress, and melancholy. L'Allegro and Il Penseroso are the first two poems in which I am referencing. L'Allegro means the happy man or joyful, and Il Penseroso means the thinker. I like how both of these poems kind of contrast the mood in which we all experience, sometimes daily. L'Allegro highlights the emotions of a nice spring day. The first part of the poem banishes melancholy and allows for a complete joy to be felt. The poem carries on in this fashion, discussing the landscape, the plowmen, the birds, the crops. He walks us by furrowed fields, a milkmaid, and introduces us to some mead, which is like a wine made from honey. We laugh, we tell stories, and we dance in the checkered shade. There is some smoke rolling out of a chimney. I imagine Milton a painter without a brush or a canvas, armed only with a pen and paper, creating scenes and colors and smells and tastes, knowing all the while that the reader's mind will become his canvas. Each canvas would be unique because we all take something a little bit different from these poems. The last line of L'Allegro is simple and conclusive. These delight, if thou canst give, mirth with thee, I mean to live. The last part made me think about the arrival fallacy that many of us get caught up in nowadays. We get so focused on completion, or when I get to this point in life, then I'll be happy. When you are always living for the future, your joy gets placed out into the horizon. And as we move closer and closer to that horizon, we never obtain it. Happiness, success, and joy does not have to be something that's constrained to the future. Milton is saying, mirth with thee. Laugh with me today, as I mean to live. Make it a habit to find happiness daily and surround yourself with good people that just make you laugh. And success, in however you define it, will be something you can experience in the present. Sadly, some of my days are spent more like the man in Il Penseroso. But hail, thou goddess sage and holy, hail, divinest melancholy. I'm chasing the resources, providing for the family, and feeling down about a situation that my actions have placed me in, leaving me pessimistic about the future or a specific situation. One line in the poem stopped me in my reading tracks, and made hail grant what love did seek. Pause and think on that one. So much to unpack in a line like that. Hell has a canny way of creating sins that you love. In search of love, you may land on porn or adultery or any other sinful pleasures. So what has hell brought to your life while you were in search of love or anything like that? The ending is unique because it goes against everything society tells us. These pleasures, melancholy give, and I, with thee, choose to live. We're advised to seek happiness, search for joy, pursue the pleasures, and find a purpose in life. But many of us may unconsciously choose to live a life of business, melancholy, stress, and depression. Some of us will die never knowing what our true potential was out of fear or even ignorance. There is no getting around these feelings sometimes, especially depending on your personality. But finding a happy balance between these two poems is very important. The next poem I want to go over is on time, and I feel this poem hits home as people kind of age in life. I'll read a bit from it, as I find it's kind of relatable to my own thoughts. Fly, envious time, till thou run out thy race. Call on the lazy, leaden, stepping hours, whose speed is but the heavy plummet's pace, and gut thyself with what thy womb devours, which is no more than what is false and vain, and merely mortal dross. So little is our loss, so little is our gain. I was curious about the usage of womb in this poem, and from my understanding, it kind of can be read as the stomach as well, whether in regards to appetite or creation. I'm not sure quite what he intended, but either seems to fit the poem. He says, glut thyself with what thy womb devours. And then he says, which is no more than what is false and vain, merely mortal dross. Dross meaning worthless or even dangerous material that should be removed. So we surround ourselves with false and vain things that we crave and we actually desire. All the while these two devour our time and consume enormous portions of our life. So little do we lose, but so little do we gain. Immediately, I think of the 4 or 5 hour daily phone usage that used to pop up on my phone. What did I truly gain from that time? 5 hours times 7 days, it's 35 hours a week. That's almost a full-time job just looking at a screen every week. Granted, some of that time may have been productive activity on there, but let's be honest, not all of it. As life becomes easier, it becomes very tempting to waste those leisurely hours on frivolous activities that bring no value to your life. I want to move on to the poem Comus, A Mask. It was originally a play performed at Ludlow Castle in 1634. It was presented as a celebration of John Egerton, the first Earl of Bridgewater, which kind of sounds like an investment firm, but I don't think it is. The play was printed anonymously in 1637, and the poem would be included in Milton's works about 10 years later. At first, it took me a bit to find interest in this poem. Sometimes the setting up of these scenes takes a good while, and I get a little impatient waiting for the meat of the story to kind of come out. And that's something I kind of have to keep working on. But after the character Comus is introduced, things get intense pretty quickly. Knowing the context of Comus kind of helps you understand the poem. Comus is based off the Greek god Dionysus. He was the god of drunken revelry, a patron to the theater, and also known as the god of fertility. And he performs and tries to perform all three of these in the poem. I will give you a quick summary to help better explain the takeaways from the poem. So there are two brothers and a sister in the woods. The lady, as she is referenced, is hungry and tired. So her two brothers separate to find her some food. Comus, the little immoral cocktail-slinging lady seducer that he is, appears on the scene as a villager and promises to bring her to her brother, as he said he just saw them. So saith she, "Shepherd, I take thy word and trust the honest offered courtesy." So she trusts Comus and agrees to go with him to find her brothers. Instead, he kidnaps her and brings her to his lair of seduction. What hath night to do with sleep? He tries to get her to drink and to basically take advantage of her. The sister is a chaste young lady, and she denies and deflects all his advances. Now, there were some very good lines in this poem that kind of really stuck out to me. When the lady is chained up and Comus is pouring a drink and seducing, she replies, "Thou canst not touch the freedom of my mind." She also says, "That which is not good is not delicious to a well-governed and wise appetite." Comus continues to pry, and he pushes himself on her. And at this point, I realize that the lady is holding her own against the temptations of Comus. She says, "Thou hast no ear nor soul to apprehend. Evil does not know what no means. Evil is not capable of hearing it." Comus's last line to the lady is, "Be wise and taste." I like the word choosing there, be wise. Be wise and taste. The lady never gives in. And right when things are about to get intense, the two brothers burst into the room and save their sister. The poem, or the play, is a test for youth in all of them. The brothers were individually tested, and the sister was obviously tested with her experience. So the lessons in the poem are very traditional, and turned out to be a very good poem. I want to move into the third set of poems. I was going to separate the third set of poems into a separate video, but because this set is only like 7 or 8 pages long, we're just going to go ahead and cover them in this video as well. The poems written during the English Civil War are almost completely different than the other two sets of poems that we have just discussed. They are very political in nature, and to grasp the takeaway, I feel you need to have a foundational understanding of the English Civil War, the Parliament during this time, and the impact of Cromwell on England. There was this one line that stuck out to me, because I feel during any revolution, there is this one idea throughout history that has always turned into reality. Blood is sometimes needed to find truth, as Jefferson would echo later in history. The tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Milton says, "For what can war but endless war still breed, till truth and right from violence be freed?" When violence is needed to find truth and to find what is right, you can almost be certain that these periods will go down in history as civil wars or revolutions. This was an intense period. It was a period that would change England forever. I actually plan to study this period pretty heavily over the next couple years, and I'd like to go back and read over these poems and with the new context to see if I can understand them in a different way. The last poem I want to go over is one on his deceased wife, actually his second wife, Catherine, who would die during childbirth. And in my opinion, this is where Milton shines. Listen to this as I'll just read some of it. So after her death, she comes to him in a dream. See what you think. Her face was veiled, yet to my fancied sight, love, sweetness, goodness in her person shined, so clear as in no face with more delight. But oh, as to embrace me, she inclined. I waked, she fled, and day brought back my night. Brought back the sorrow, pain. It also brought back the reality of his blindness. You see, Milton was blind at the time of writing this, and he would not have been able to see her anyway. Waking up from that dream brought back his night in many ways, and I'll leave you with that. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and I hope you enjoyed the second and third set of the poems from John Milton. They're very, very good. I would highly suggest reading through them. If you want to check it out, in the description below, I'll link a Penguin Classic set that has most of these poems in it. And then next in the series, we move into Paradise Lost. But I think the next video that goes up on the channel is actually going to be How to Read a Book by Mr. Adler. I'm almost finished with it. I really wanted to dive into this one next before I got into Paradise Lost. That way I can kind of build up the skills needed to really break that poem down. I've been looking forward to both of these, actually this book and Paradise Lost, and it's going to be a good time. So this video will be coming out next, and then we'll move into Paradise Lost. If you want to purchase some of my coffee, the link to the Brown Bean Yum Yum is always in the description below. You can use the code THECAUSE for 15% off your first order. All these videos can be found in podcast form on all the streaming platforms. I will also link that in the description below for your convenience. So How to Read a Book and Paradise Lost are next. Drink some amazing coffee, read some amazing books, and I will see you very soon. Thank you so much. Love y'all.
I was making lots of noise, busking on the city streets. I came back from Brooklyn, but you didn't come back for me.